I'm Steve Potter. This is Cityscape. And coming up, a discussion with actor Hal Holbrook. A new exhibit now on display at the St. Louis Art Museum, in part, examines St. Louis as a divided city. It's a multimedia presentation by Brooklyn-based artist Mariam Ghani, who's completing a residency at the Sam Fox School of Design and Visual Arts at Washington University. One part of the Currents 110 Mariam Ghani exhibit is a film called The City and the City, which was shot in Kinloch and just north of downtown St. Louis at the Cotton Belt Freight Depot. St. Louis Public Radio's art and culture reporter, Willis Ryder Arnold, spoke with Ghani and first asked about the film.
It's based on the 2009 novel by China Mieville, The City and the City. And the premise of that novel is that there are two cities which are geographically intertwined, but over time became so divided that they actually became separate countries. And they have a political border that's policed by a special and kind of spooky force called Breach. But because the cities are actually kind of geographically crosshatched together, you can't police that border in a really at one point in a really coherent way. So instead, the separation is enforced on an everyday basis by the citizens having learned from birth to unsee everything and everyone that belongs to the other city.
So when exactly did the idea for this project cross your mind initially?
I actually had read the novel a number of years ago, close to when it first came out. And at the time that I read it, I thought, well, this could be about Kabul, because I was in Kabul at the time. And it is a kind of very flexible allegory that could apply to any number of cities, which are different cities for different people. But when I came to St. Louis last fall to begin the Freund Fellowship, this collaborative fellowship between Washington University and the St. Louis Art Museum, the book kind of came back into my mind because it's a noir as well as a sci-fi novel, and it's a murder mystery. It begins with a murder. And because of the investigation into the murder, all the kind of fundamental structures of this world are investigated and then questioned and finally breached. And that struck me as a really interesting way to talk about some of the things that have been happening in St. Louis recently.
So was it directly affected by the shooting death of Michael Brown and the subsequent events in Ferguson?
Mm-hmm. I think, you know, coming to St. Louis at the moment that I did, which was in October, it was inescapable that I had to reckon with the events in Ferguson, and especially with the movement that happened in the wake of those events, because it was actually Ferguson October here in St. Louis. And there was so much happening all the time on the streets and so many really incredibly powerful images being made by that movement. And one of the ones that struck me the most was the image of the mirrored coffin. And if you look at the film that I made, that's definitely an image that I used, because the body of the murdered man in my film is only represented as a series of shattered mirrors.
So you've described just a little bit of what the film looks like. Can you give us a few more instances of what that film would look like if you were sitting in front of it?
Mm-hmm. Sure, yeah. Well, when you come into the installation in the St. Louis Art Museum, you are first confronted actually with a sound sculpture. That's the first thing you see and hear when you walk into the museum, into the gallery in which the work is installed. And it's a 7-level pedestal with 7 different speakers on it. They're all very different looking, and they have very different sound qualities as well, because I found them in 7 different thrift stores around St. Louis. Odd speakers, odd lost speakers from odd lost sound systems. And you hear the voices of people from all over St. Louis, different ages, different races, different genders, different classes, from different parts of the county and the city, speaking about their relationship to the city, how they feel about it, and especially about their relationship to public space in the city and how they navigate that. And they're basically performing a kind of open-ended script that I wrote, which has a lot of blank spaces in it, kind of like performance Mad Libs, and using those blank spaces to tell some of their own stories and fill it in with their own feelings and thoughts.
And I know I asked you initially about the video, but as we're on the topic of the sound piece, what was it like interacting with people as they were doing these performance Mad Libs?
Right, yeah. It's a kind of very intense experience just to create a space where people can speak and all you do as an artist is listen. I think as artists, we're not always trained to do that or expected to do that. We're expected to be the ones expressing ourselves. And for me, I've always been interested in listening to other people and thinking about how, as an artist, I can actually make that possible. But it's not a simple thing to do. And it's not always easy, actually, to create a space where people feel comfortable telling you things that can be difficult or intimate or kind of complicated, actually creating a space where people feel able to confess something in a way or to speak about things that are not easy to talk about.
How do you kind of create that, for lack of a better phrase, safe space for people to have those conversations and open up?
I mean, one thing that's important is having it be an intimate space, have it be a space where there isn't anyone else there, where it's just me and the person that I'm talking to, and where I don't interject myself into it, where I don't say anything in these sessions, really. I just sit there and listen. I present the script of prompts, and then I don't say anything unless people ask me a question.
So after you walk into the space, you see this seven-tiered installation of sound sculptures. And then what else is in the room?
Then there's seven photographs on the wall to your left. And those photographs are of places in St. Louis that are used in the video as real places woven into this kind of fictional narrative that's partially borrowed from China Miéville's book. And in the photographs, they are what they are. They're labeled as their actual place names with all the kind of histories that are associated with those actual places in St. Louis. So it was important to me to have that element in the show as well, to have the fictional kind of narrative that allows us to talk about the kind of divisions in the city at this slight remove, but at the same time, to have these photographs where also the places are there and given their real names.
How do you see it as important to actually have the representation of these real places as part of the fictional narrative as well?
I mean, I think, you know, it's good to always have the play between fiction and documentary in the work. To me, I think that's always an interesting line to work on. And in the film of The City and the City that I made, there is a lot of play with that line because of this kind of structure of seeing and unseeing in the narrative. I was able to kind of work in a very playful way with the geography of St. Louis and sort of crosshatch together places that are not actually geographically proximate in real life. That are in my film are actually sort of melded together or meshed together.
So do you actually have one character, say, walk from a location into another location as though it's seamless, even though they're disparately located places?
Well, I actually used compositing. I used motion effects to represent this process of seeing and unseeing. So there's at one point in the film, actually, Flora Place dissolves into Pruitt Igoe, for example. and someone who watched it said to me, I'll never look at Flora Place the same way again.
Seems believable.
Yeah.
So when you're having that kind of intersection between public spaces that aren't necessarily immediately adjacent, how do you try and work with an atmosphere that makes it believable to a viewer that they might be interlocated?
Right, yeah. I think the narration in this film is extremely important. And I think two things make it work in this film. One is the text itself, and I had to work very hard on stitching that text together. It took me a very long time to finish it and to find a way to work both the kind of reimagined real histories of St. Louis that are embedded in that text and sort of woven into the conceptual framework of that sort of science fiction story, which isn't really science fiction in the end. When you get all the way through the narrative, you realize there isn't very much science fiction in it.
When I initially told somebody about this project, their immediate response was, oh, well, St. Louis is a divided city. Mm-hmm. And I'm just curious whether or not that was something that you felt, I know it's been talked about a lot, but felt was already there in the piece.
I think one of the reasons I was interested in making a project in St. Louis is because many of the projects that I make with my longtime collaborator, Erin Ellen Kelly, who's actually from St. Louis, she grew up here. Many of the projects we make together are about spatial politics. And of course, the spatial politics of St. Louis are fascinating. And I think we always imagine we could make a really great project about the spatial politics of St. Louis, and those spatial politics are about the divisions here.
And one of the things that you've said during a previous conversation that we had was that the divisions are maintained by us.
Yes.
Could you explain what you mean by that?
Yeah. Well, that is the premise of The City and the City, both the book and the film. Ultimately, when you sort of get to the end of the narrative, what is explained by the avatar of Breach, when the detective who's the protagonist actually meets one of these shadowy figures who police the border, this avatar of Breach explains that, you know, it's you, you're the ones who maintain the border, really. We're just the last ditch. You know, you're the ones who keep the separation going every day, because you're the ones who maintain this fiction of unseeing. And everyone knows it doesn't actually work, but you all pretend that it does. And as long as you keep pretending, it does work. Divisions are maintained by these fictions, right? These fictions that we all keep to, these illusions that we, or fictions that we do inhabit separate spheres. And that is, you know, something that we ourselves maintain. It's not something that is necessarily imposed on us by the state, although it does come from a series of long histories of policy decisions and also larger, you know, forces that shaped our own perceptions and our own feelings about the way that the world should work. So in St. Louis, of course, there's this long history of restrictive deed covenants and the role of, like, the realtors associations in shaping those. There's a long history of the very interesting history about tax policy and its role in creating, you know, the way that St. Louis works today. There's a lot of very complicated histories that go into making the city that we see now.
It sounds like you've come to know a fair amount about the structure of the city.
I always do a lot of research, yes.
And one of those research points was, in fact, your collaborator, Erin Ellen Kelly. How do you work together to produce your work? She's a choreographer, and you're doing the video and the direction.
Well, our collaboration shifts from project to project in terms of the roles that we each take on, or the kind of proportion of the collaboration, or which kinds of roles we're taking on, or how much of each role each of us is playing. So in certain projects, we're actually co-directing. In others, she's choreographing and I'm directing. In some projects, she's actually also done some of the filming, and I've performed. So, you know, it is a flexible engine, the collaboration, because it's been going on for so long that we've had time to explore all the different permutations. We've been working together for 9 years now, and we've made quite a lot of projects together in a lot of different places.
It sounds like you focus on complicated situations and kind of difficult interactions between people. One of your next projects is going to be examining five lost films in Afghanistan. Could you give us just a brief description of what that will be?
Yeah, so I'm actually working on a feature film about these five unfinished films from the communist era in Afghanistan. So they stretch from 1978 to 1991, covering the entirety of that period. And they were made by four different filmmakers who are all still alive. And three of them are still active in the film world in Afghanistan. And these films are really interesting to me because they kind of represent the gap between the stories that were being told on screen at the time, which represent this kind of idealized communist state that exists, I think, only on film. It maybe could have been, but it definitely wasn't. And the actual history of the period, which is much more complicated and much more fraught and didn't really happen in the way that the stories were told about it on film.
That's Brooklyn-based artist Mariam Ghani talking with arts and culture reporter Willis Ryder Arnold. The exhibit, Currents 110, Mariam Ghani, which in part examines St. Louis as a divided city, is now on display at the St. Louis Art Museum through July the 12th. Coming up next, actor Hal Holbrook. This is St. Louis Public Radio.